Hello and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today we're going to talk about doing the Great Loop in segments because we do see more and more people attempting it that way. Our guest is Mike O'Malley, who has been doing just that for quite a bit of time now. But before we introduce Mike and hear more about his adventures, I do want to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. And as always, we thank them and encourage all of our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Now I'd like to go ahead and introduce Mike O'Malley. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
You're most welcome, Kim.
Let's start off a little bit by kind of tell us about your style of cruising. You are doing the Great Loop in segments, so tell us a little bit about the boat and kind of just the overall theory that you're using as you go about this.
Well, first of all, I'm having the time of my life. I am just, and this is a lot to do with my wife, who I've been dreaming about doing this for 10 years, and she finally said, just go buy that boat. So we went out and we bought it, and I thought about this, and I'm still working full-time, and I wanted to get the cruising in between days off and things like that. So I analyzed what would suit my needs the best, and I decided to do this in a 20-foot center console. Because it fit into my monetary budget. I have a lot of hotel points that I could stay at a hotel. So what I did is when I decided to do this, we would travel X amount of hours a day, have an idea of where we're going to go to, would get a hotel that night, have a nice meal, and then we'd continue on the next spot. And then we would do, not knowing exactly how many miles or how far we're going to get in any given time period, we would decide things as we go along based on weather, about what's happening, and different things like that.
Mm-hmm. So we encourage everybody to do the Great Loop in the way that it works for them. Everybody has to make this their own trip. And your style is very different than some other people. We don't have too many people who stay at hotels along the way, but that's what has worked for you. So I guess the prime reason, you did mention budget and you mentioned that you're still working. So tell us a little bit about how that works out. Do you work while you're looping or is work saved for when you travel back home?
So, well, both. So what happens is, I'll start with what we did first. So we started mm-hmm. out of Chicago. I'm a Chicago area resident. And we started out of Chicago, and we headed south. And this was first week of October. And we had no idea how far we're going to get or where it would get to. And we would travel along, and we would find a marina to go into, and we'd get a hotel. And I'd carry my laptop with me, and then I'd work when we pulled into the marina, we'd go have dinner, go to the hotel, I'd work on my computer for an hour or two, then get up in the morning, work for an hour or two, and then we'd boat for the rest of the day, and then that would be my habit. I didn't work aggressively. I worked somewhat because I had people back mm-hmm. in my office doing work, but I had to answer questions, take care of certain things. You know, there's always something coming up. So I was always accessible that way. I had my cell phone with me and on the rivers. It worked pretty much everywhere that they could call me, ask me a question, I could answer it. And then if I needed to send an email or work on something, I could do it at night from my laptop.
Okay. When you're looping in segments, how do you personally decide how long each segment will be? I know you kind of mentioned that you don't know exactly where you'll stop, but how do you decide when it's time to pick up and when it's time to stop and head back home for work?
So what happens is when we're on the boat, I always know I'm going to do some work at night, so the work doesn't dictate how I'm going to do anything. So what happens is when we did, you know, you never know, because everyone says the best laid plans never work out, which is true when you're doing the loop.
Mm-hmm.
You should have plans, but you shouldn't have a schedule. So what
exactly.
we would do is we would see where we're going, and what we would do is we'd start out early in the morning, get out about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and then around 1 o'clock, knowing how we're traveling and how things are going, what the weather is like, then we would figure we're going to travel X amount of hours more, whether it's 2 hours more or 3 hours more, figure out where we'd end up, find a marina nearby, and this is where, you know, those cruising guides come in really handy because they have a whole list of marinas in there that you can access really easy while you're cruising along. And I was really blessed in that. My brother, who's my partner, was very into me doing this. I'd call him and say, find me a marina near here, and then find me a hotel. And then, you know, in an hour, he'd call me back and say, okay, this is the marina you want to go to, and here's your hotel reservation. So I had a home port crew helping me out do this. And then the next day, we did the same thing. So on our first leg, since we travel a lot faster than a lot of the trawlers, we made it out of Chicago, and we got through the first two locks. And then we pulled into this marina where we had no one. We didn't know anyone. And we were met by this really nice guy. And we said, hey, is there harbor master around? He goes, oh, no, he's gone. Why? What do you need? Said, we need a spot to park the boat for the night. And he goes, oh, my neighbor just pulled his boat out for the season. Here, you can put it right here. And then we said, hey, do you know where a hotel is nearby? And he said, oh, yeah, there's one in town. My girlfriend will give you a ride in the town. Don't worry about it. So, you know, there's so many nice people at these different marinas that you meet along the road or along the river that are just – that aren't loopers, who are really helpful to the loopers. So we would just go from spot. And then the next day, same things. We didn't know how long these locks would take because sometimes we waited 3 hours for a lock. Sometimes we only waited 30 minutes for a lock. So it's just time went on, and then, you know, we'd find a – knowing where we'd be in a couple hours, then we'd plan ahead that way.
Okay. And actually, other loopers kind of have the same process because they're also largely pulling into marinas at night. Your need is actually, though, a little bit more complicated because you also have the need for a hotel, which many loopers wouldn't have, even those sometimes doing it in segments are staying on their boat. So I can see where you have a little extra wrinkle in your planning there. So that certainly makes it a little bit more complicated. But you are – what's typically your cruising speed?
We would cruise – my best fuel range is we would cruise at about between 22 and 26 miles an hour.
Okay.
And with
so
that,
substantially
I'd get,
faster than some loopers.
Right. And I that would be my best mileage. And then I would average about 5 miles to the gallon.
So how long typically are you out there cruising on any particular segment? Is it weeks? Is it months before you go back home?
So I do it a week at a time, or between a week or 9 days at a time, because that's all I can be off of work at any given time. So we didn't know where we're going to do. Like when we got from Chicago Kentucky Lakes to the southern part of Kentucky Lakes, right above the Tom Bigby Waterway, in 1 week. And we left the boat there, and then we flew out of Memphis back to Chicago. And then the goal was when we did the second week, which was like 6 weeks later, the goal was to get as far as Mobile. Well, we were breezing through the locks at that point. We had no hang-ups, and we made Mobile from there in 2 days. So now we're in Mobile. We spent two nights in Mobile because we actually stayed over at Fairhope, at the Fairhope Marina. Really nice people, and I believe they're an AGL sponsor too. And great people over there. We spent two nights there, great town. And then the weather window was awesome to cross the Gulf. So we headed over to Apalachicola, and we actually made it to Tarpon Springs. So we made it all the way from the top of the Tom Bigby Waterway to to Tarpon Springs in a six-day time period.
Wow. That's quick.
We found a marina, we put the boat up, and then I spent the winter in Chicago working, and my boat spent the winter in Tarpon Springs sitting on a rack.
Okay. And that's certainly kind of the obvious question that a lot of people wonder about logistically for doing the loop in segments is what do you do with your boat. And of course, since yours is a little bit smaller, you do have the option to pull it out of the water. But I'm going to take a quick pause right here and hear a message from one of our sponsors. But when we come back, I would like to talk about the idea of leaving your boat, because that is many people's prized possession. And leaving it behind as they travel home is sometimes a little bit of a nerve-wracking undertaking. So we'll be back in a moment, and we'll cover that topic.
Northport Bay Boatyard is a complete marine service facility located on Grand Traverse Bay in Northport, Michigan. They feature over 85,000 square feet of heated storage, and they are offering loopers a 10% discount on heated storage, as well as a winter labor rate of $75. That's a $10 discount off their usual rate. For more information, visit www.npbby.com or call 231-386-5151. Northport Bay Boatyard is a proud Commander sponsor of AGLCA.
And we're back on Great Loop Radio. Our topic today is doing the Great Loop in segments, and our guest is Mike O'Malley. Mike is from Chicago, but he is currently doing the Great Loop in segments, and we've talked about looping for about a week at a time and then heading home for 6 weeks or so to do some work. And, of course, Mike, that can be a little bit traumatic for people to leave their boat behind at an unfamiliar marina. So talk to us a little bit about how you select a marina that you feel comfortable leaving your boat at, and what the process would look like as you're figuring out where to leave it when you travel home.
So what I would do is halfway through the journey of the week, I'd realize where I'd probably end up. And then what I would do is I'd actually go to the AGLCA website and look at marinas in the city or town that I was going to leave the boat at. And I'd send them a quick email telling them that I'm doing the loop, this is what my needs are, and can you help me out and what your costs are? And then I would get a lot of favorable responses back, and then I would call them, make personal contact with them. We would negotiate a price. After I explained that I would need one haul out and one put in, and that's it. And they would then set up a deal with me. I'd sign a contract, and I'd leave the boat, and they would pull it out of the water. We'd wash it down, get any dirt or crud, salt water off of it, put the covers on it, and then they would put it up in a rack, and I would say goodbye to my Sharona, and then until I come back.
So for someone who perhaps is in a boat that is too big to be dry stacked and isn't real practical to pull for the time being while they're going home, do you think that that process would be any different in terms of finding a marina, or would you suggest that they go about it the same way?
I would say they do it the same way. I mean, a lot of the marinas listed on the AGL, if I can say it right tonight,
it's a mouthful.
On the website. Yeah, mm-hmm. Find it on the website, and you make personal contact. They're very personal, and they're always trying to help people. And, you know, if you're going to leave the boat for 1 month or 2 months, and you need electricity, don't need electricity, need water, don't need water, that's all involved in the pricing of things. Then they're very adamant, and then they'll watch it, and you know, you'd need to talk to them as, hey, can you check to make sure that the bilge pump is working, that this is working, so you don't come back to a submerged boat. But they're very accommodating, very willing to help.
Okay. Do you have any tricks or tips that you learned on traveling to and from the boat that can help save time or money? Because we've already talked about, we suggest that people don't have a real strict schedule. So for people who are flying home, it may be a little bit challenging to get a reasonably priced air ticket because they don't know exactly necessarily where they'll be when they stop for that segment, or they don't necessarily know when it'll be. I know you're in the travel industry. Tell us a little bit about how you would get from the boat to a rental car to an airport, first of all, and then if you have any tips for making the trip home a little bit more cost effectively.
So the my greatest suggestion would be everyone either get a United Airlines or an American Airlines credit card and put all your charges on those credit card and earn frequent flyer miles. And then you can use those miles at the last minute to get anywhere in the 48 states. And on United Airlines, the most it ever costs you is 25,000 miles one way. So if usually at the last minute, you can usually get a ticket on United for 25, Americans a little bit more on their mileage at last minute from certain city pairs. So instead of putting it on a cash back credit card or whatever, use a mileage credit card and rack up those frequent flyer miles on that, and that will save you a lot of money for future use. And that's what I did. I have a lot of frequent flyer miles that I've gained on using my credit card over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use that to plan my trips back and forth.
Okay. And, you know, although you're traveling a little bit faster than some and you're in a boat that's a little smaller than some, really the process of what you're doing is not all that different. So tell us a little bit about how you get from the marina, although you probably do this more frequently because of the hotel stays, but what's the best way to get from a marina to an airport, for example? Is that challenging? How do you usually go about that?
So the thing is, our most challenging spot was when we're right at the top of the Tom Bigby Waterway, because we're going to fly out of Memphis. So we pulled in on Saturday right at noon. Enterprise rental car closes at noon. I couldn't get an Enterprise rental car. So I'm sitting there, and there's a gentleman who actually does shuttles to Memphis, but he was off that weekend visiting his daughter down in Mississippi for college. So I had no way to get to the Memphis airport. So I'm sitting there and go, okay, how am I going to get to the Memphis airport? So I called Penske Truck Rental, and I called U-Haul, and Penske had a truck available, and we borrowed the marina car, and we went over to the Penske Truck Rental, the two of us, picked up the truck, brought it back, dropped off the marina car, and we drove a truck to Memphis, and I dropped it off at the Penske Truck Rental right near the airport, and we walked over and mm-hmm. got on an airplane and flew home. So, you know, Enterprise, a lot of times, will let a car go one way. They're readily available, and they're very friendly, and you have a discount code on the website to use, which helps out. Or if you really need to go that extra step, you can go to a U-Haul or Penske. Uber, a lot of towns have Uber, and we've used Uber in different places. We used it in Charleston to get from the marina to the hotel to the airport because it was too far of a service for a shuttle, and then there's always cabs that are available.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I would imagine that for planning purposes, when you're looking at different segments, if your requirement is going to be to get to an airport when you end your segment, there's probably different towns that you can choose that are going to be a little bit more conducive to getting to the airport. So that may
Absolutely.
Work out as well.
Absolutely. So if I had to take an extra day to get to a marina that's only a 1 or 2 hour drive as opposed to an 8 hour drive, I'll do that. So I think mm-hmm. ahead that way that I'm going to get to a marina that is close to a major city, that's close to an airport, so that I could fly back to Chicago. And I'm really lucky being in Chicago because Chicago is a hub and a lot of flights go nonstop from a lot of cities to Chicago.
Right. Mike, what would you say have been the pros of doing the loop over a longer period of time in segments, and what would you say have been the cons?
Well, the pros is I can do it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
because if I had to wait to retirement, I don't know when I'm going to retire. So I may be doing it. I would be doing it in my late 60s, early 70s. Where now I get to do it now, and I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
The con is I just love being on the water, and I miss being on the water. And
mm-hmm.
you know, you meet a lot of nice people as you go along at these different marinas and stuff. So I'll meet a group of people, and then they'll go on. And, you know, I'll never see them again, where a lot of people are doing it continuously. We'll always meet up with the same people. You know, they keep crossing paths. Now, it was funny
right.
when we had met on the Tom Bigby, we had met a couple from Canada who were cruising. And then when we were on the Intracoastal Waterway, on our way to Apalachicola, we came across them, and we talked back and forth on the radio, and it was good to talk to them and see how they're doing and stuff like that. But we were heading on past them, and because we got in the Apalachicola and did the crossing before they even got to Apalachicola because of the, you know, the travel, that the distance we can travel compared to what they could do.
Right. Okay. Any last tips or thoughts for anyone who's considering doing the looping segments?
I would just say do the loop. Doesn't matter what type of boat you have. Enjoy yourself. Have a lot of fun. While you plan, don't schedule. Just plan. And always have a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, and a plan E. And then you always have fallback. And just enjoy yourself and enjoy this. This is a great experience. The scenery is awesome. The people you meet are great. And you will never regret doing this.
Well, and I think you've really touched upon some of the key things that we like to stress, which is not to have a schedule, have a plan, but not necessarily a schedule. And we also encourage people to just, you know, don't wait for the perfect boat or the perfect time, because you just never know what's down the road. So we always encourage people to go on the boat that they can afford now and the boat that's going to enable them to do it now. So congratulations for you for taking all that to heart and really implementing that and getting to do the loop now. When do you think you'll finish it?
Well, we've just – a couple things have happened this year, and the goal was to finish it this year. But then my daughter got engaged. And I didn't think that would be a big deal, but she's getting married in August. But now all of a sudden we're having showers, we're having this, we're having that. So the goal is to leave out – oh, and my wife lost her job too. After 41 years working for the same hospital group, they used a term called reduction in force, and they reduced one person. That was her, because she was the highest paid employee in the hospital.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
So financially, you know, it's hard to spend money when you have your income drops. So, but the goal right now is we're going to leave out May 11th. The boat is in Northeast Maryland. We're going to splash it. We're going to head up to Philadelphia and then to New York City. We're going to put it in New York City. We're going to leave it there for a couple weeks, and then I'm going to take the trailer out there and bring the boat back to Chicago because of the wedding commitments for the summer. And then in 17, we're going to take the boat back out to New York City, splash it again, and then we're going to finish the loop in 17.
Well, and that's another plus to doing it in segments, is that when you do have these life interruptions, it really doesn't change the plan all that significantly. And having a smaller boat that you can trailer also gives you a whole lot of flexibility for doing it in segments. So sounds like your plan is coming together quite well. I'm glad you're enjoying it, and I know that you will continue to do so. Mike, thank you for joining us today. Any final thoughts on something maybe we didn't cover that we should have?
The only thing I tell people is stop planning and just go do it. Oh, and one other thing, provisioning your boat. Here's a secret. There's almost a Walmart or a Target in any city you go to. So it's easy to pick up supplies. It's easy to pick up marine parts. It's very easy to get things. So don't over-provision your boat, because you can always get more things.
Perfect. That's more great advice. Mike, thank you so much. We appreciate the information. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.
Be warned that once you pick up a refreshingly cold drink from McDonald's and people see just how refreshingly cold that drink from McDonald's is, you may create drink envy. Because there are drinks, then there are drinks from McDonald's.
For a morning brew that really creates a stir, get any size iced coffee, including caramel and French vanilla, for just 99 cents before 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.